Welcome everyone back to the latest episode of the Here's Johnny podcast. I am your host, Larry.
And I am your other host, Justin.
I think that this might have been our longest gap without a film review.
Oh, wait, really? Has it been that long?
It's been a month.
Whoa. Oh my God. Yeah, you're right. We just... Holy shit. Yeah, the host.
Yeah.
Damn. Wow.
I know.
Wow. Okay.
Pretty crazy, right? Like, yeah. Usually we knock these out and we're about to go on a little spree of those because of some of the length of these games and stuff coming up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was actually looking at the schedule and I was kind of surprised by that. But yeah, we're reviewing The Birds this week. It's kind of a companion episode to last week's episode, which was my discussion episode for this season, a discussion on Hitchcock and his treatment of actresses, especially Debbie Hendren, and then obviously the Me Too movement and how do we treat art and artists. I have kind of an update on that for myself with Mr. Manson.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go for it.
So I went and dug out my PSP, obviously for Silent Hill Origins,
yeah.
And I found my old Lest We Forget, the Greatest Hits of Marilyn Manson album.
Okay.
One of the first albums I ever bought. So I listened to it the whole way through. Put it in my computer, had to listen to a CD in forever, but I listened to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it was a great time. I mean, The Nobodies is probably my favorite song by Manson. It's just... But, anywho, and then I put it back in the CD case. I went and got my shirts, some of my concert stuff of his, and I just put it in the box and put it all away.
Oh, yeah, you're done?
For a long time. I went through and deleted all his songs off my Spotify playlists. But I'm listening to music again. It took a while, but I went through, like, I'm listening to it again, which is nice.
That's good, though. Yeah. I mean, you need, even if it's like in a weird way, like a closure listen for a little bit.
To like get to do it and then just be at a better place with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, it was, yeah. But yeah, the only good thing about not listening to music for like 3 weeks was I got my podcast back catalog. So I'm all caught up again. Yeah, a little bit of stuff for the show. On Twitch, we'll be working on two projects with some collaborators. Well, one will just be me and Justin, Monster Hunter World, and that will be on rotating weeks with a playthrough of the forest. We brought Rachel into the forest with me and Justin and obviously our other patron, Shannon. And so we're going to be rotating bi-weekly with those two. So one week will be the forest, one week will be Monster Hunter World. Monster Hunter World, we may review it if we beat it, but it's more just for content generation.
Yeah, it's more just like so we have a game to play together and hopefully...
And it's not that scary. So no. Like at the same time, I don't really feel compelled to get it in.
Yeah, that's fair. Especially with the deluge of incredibly long games we're about to go into.
What I was getting ready to say is that the next game we'll be playing on the podcast, which will be The Sinking City, which is a Lovecraftian game. I think you picked it. I'm pretty sure
it's what it is, right? All I'm aware of is that it is Lovecraftian. It is by Frogware, the people who do Sherlock Holmes games, and I fucking love those games, so
okay, why the hell not? So it'll be interesting for me, but that will be coming up soon, and then also we have to beat Final Fantasy X.
Yeah, I haven't touched it. And
either by. I'm still at Machlania Temple.
I'm not going to lie. Persona 5 Strikers comes out this week, so I'm probably going to rush through that in a week. And then
no, I feel that because I actually plan, like I mentioned to you, I plan on playing Bravely Default on stream when it comes out next week. So
is that next Friday when it comes out?
Yep.
Oh, okay, awesome.
Yeah, so that's show notes. I'm trying to think of anything.
Do we talk about the big break that we just added in there?
No, I'm waiting to get a little bit of confirmation.
Okay. Well, then we will get back
to you. But we can mention it right now.
Okay.
Because I can guarantee you part of it.
Yes.
So, sorry for the awful tease, but we finally have a release date for Spiral, which is Chris Rock's new addition to the Saw franchise. Justin is a ginormous fan.
I fucking love the Saw. Like, they are, it's weirdly like my dirty little secret in a way, but I don't know something about them. Like, I myself am not a huge fan of like like torture porn, but for some reason I'll fucking watch a Saw movie with a big bucket of popcorn and just love every second of it.
Yeah. For me, it's hit or miss. Sometimes I love them and sometimes I hate them and the story is crazy. So we made a compromise.
Yes.
Justin will do the plot summaries.
Yes.
And
well, I think on the first one, I am not going to do the plot summary.
I'll do, yeah. But I'm going to say, we are working on some collaborations because this is something that's important to Justin. Yes. But Rachel and Mars will be joining us for the first Saw film.
And Rachel has never seen Saw.
Yes, the host of Zombie Girls has not seen any of the Saw films.
I'm excited for that. I'm trying to think if there's like a way the four of us can watch it together. I'm sure there are ways. We'll have to talk to Rachel about that.
But then it's the exact same structure we had designed last summer before COVID. Or last, I guess, spring. So it's Saw, the first film, Saw, the game. Then we're doing the Amanda arc, which is 2, 3, and 4. Then the Hoffman arc, which is 5, 6, and 3D. Those will be like kind of joint, almost like discussion. So probably not so much focus on like movie reviews. We probably won't actually score them that way.
Yeah, which is kind of like a general topic, if you will.
And then we'll do Jigsaw, which is the prequel, spoiler, to the original Saw film. And we'll wrap it all up with Spiral. And then somewhere in the middle of that, Resident Evil Village comes out, so that'll be there too.
Yeah, it's going to be like a couple week break from Kaiju, but I think
it'll be fun. On Twitch. On Twitch, with the exception of us playing the Saw game, at that point in time, we're actually probably going to be pretty buried in Death Stranding or Dark Souls.
Yeah, it'll be... Oh yeah, there's going to be like Saw... I mean, Village, obviously, we have talked about it. I think we're both going to basically... Mainline is the wrong word, but...
It'll be going straight into my veins, for sure.
Yeah. I might take a day off work for that, but, you know, just like
I was telling you that I am actually moving at that point in time.
Yes.
So I'm not actually 100% sure how I will, how I'm going to pull that off, but I'm working on some stuff in my head.
I'm sure you'll get it done. It's Resident Evil.
Unfortunately, this is going to push back our stuff a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it adds, what, like 6 weeks or something like that? Including Village, it's 7, I think?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. But hey, Kaiju until August.
This always happens. And like actually today when I was looking at this list, I know I was telling you I was like trying to edit it and stuff.
Yeah.
I was trying to see if there was anything I could cut out, like any movies I wanted to cut out. But that's part of the problem is I pick these movies because I think they're all good indicators. And then with Death Stranding being a 40-hour game and Dark Souls 3 being a 40-hour game, I kind of need these movies to pad.
Yes, absolutely you do. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Although, you know what? Maybe like if we end up getting one of these games done early, we could always record it and drop it early and see where we go from there.
Yeah, because I already dropped some games. I'm sure you saw we aren't doing Dino Crisis 2 any longer.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that can wait.
Yeah, we just have too much going on. Yeah. Okay, so that's a lot of the show notes and stuff. I can't think of anything else I need to talk about there. We'll keep this part brief, but Justin, has there anything been new with you? Any games or movies you've been up to?
Actually, this is the first time I've talked about it on the podcast, but, well, not the first time I've talked about this game, but the first time I've talked about this is I finally got my Persona 5 Royal Platinum. Thank you. It took me, I think it was like 75 hours. I still, you know what? I really thought that once I beat it, I would kind of be over it. No, I just listened to that soundtrack on repeat still. Other than that, though, I've been playing Cat Mario there, Super Mario 3D World. And
oh, fun.
Bowser's Fury, which is fun. I guess it's a little bit of Kaiju, too, with Bowser's Fury. Mm-hmm. It's been good. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Oh, I've been continuing my Nuzlocke run in Pokemon.
Fun.
And I actually also started to play Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in Time for the Super Nintendo because
fun.
I'm on a nostalgic kick now. So that's
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and, but other than that, like honestly, I've just been working a lot, so nothing really else new with me. What about yourself?
I think I mentioned last time that I platinumed RE2 Remake.
Yes, you did.
That was a great time. I'm working on Kingdom Hearts. I'm working on grinding up to level 100 and doing the synthesis stuff. I got all 30 items synthesized, or however the fuck you say that. I can never say that word.
Synthesized?
Thank you. Yes. But I still have to do the three final weapons.
Okay.
And that's obviously the three most annoying materials to farm. So I have to do that. I beat Kurt, Ziza, and the Phantom. So I still have the Mysterious Man, Hollow Bastion, and Sephiroth, and the Ice Titan left. And then I probably have two more playthroughs of the game. One will be the don't change equipment,
yeah,
don't die. And I did check there is an easy mode, and that's how I'll be doing that.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, no doubt.
And then the proud mode.
Man, proud mode is probably going to be a pain in the ass.
Yeah, my goal is to beat the game, like get all the trophies done on my current save file.
Yeah.
Do the easy run. And then do the
proud mode, proud just mode like run. Without having to worry about anything else. That's
yeah, exactly. It's that's how I kind of did Resident Evil 2. Is like I saved the hardcore Jill run for the last trophy.
Good plan. Good plan. Yeah, and it does suck that you can't carry any of your like. There's no like new game plus basically.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, that doesn't bother me. And the reason why I started doing it was kind of similar. You said I changed up my alarm sound when I wake up in the morning, and I'm currently listening to it's called a Vitamin String Quartet, and they play like video game and like movie song, but orchestral. And I found just a beautiful version of Dearly Beloved, and I was like, "Oh, I want to play Kingdom Hearts again." But yeah, I'm going to try to get back into the streaming things. I've kind of been in a funk, but my plan is to really put some effort into Final Fantasy X. Got to get that done. Especially since I'm not able to play Silent Hill Origins on stream. And then, yeah, then we'll have those big games coming up and they'll...
Oh, sorry to interrupt. I completely forgot. I started Silent Hill Origins.
Yes. Yes, you did. You had a good viewer, too, when you were playing last night. You had, like, seven people watching you.
Yeah, yeah. And it was fun. I'm emulating the PSP version. There's still some, like, graphical hiccups, but I just got to bring up the menu and drop it again and then it's fine. It's interesting. I'm excited to talk about it, and there's a lot of wet butts.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking
about. And I'm not going to tell you anymore.
My plan is to play it tomorrow night when my wife, it's tax season, so she has to work Saturday. So my plan is to hang out with her until she goes to bed and then maybe play it straight through tomorrow night.
I won't lie, I'm hoping to have it beat by the time this episode comes out. So,
oh, by Monday.
Oh yeah,
I remember recording. We're playing right now. I was understanding. Yeah, but that's kind of my plan. I think that's everything I have for background. That's a long intro, but we have some stuff we needed to cover.
Yeah, absolutely.
So show updates. But yeah, I think that's it, Jay. Unless you can think of someone else.
No. We will be re-recording our outro soon. Not this week, yes. But soon. Because we've been putting it off for a while.
We honestly need to make like a list and just tackle them and get some stuff done.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, I think we honestly just need to maybe record an episode early and then just spend a Thursday night getting through some of the stuff we've been meaning to do for a while.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think that there's something coming up here that I think we'll be able to spend Thursday night. Yeah, we'll figure it out. We got it, yeah.
But with that... without further ado, let's review our first Hitchcock film. King Hunger ever won a year, wristle-tee, rustle-tee, now, 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 with every stroke she shed a tear. Wristle-tee, rustle-tee, hey, Johnny, dostle-tee, rest, ain't quality, wristle-tee, rustle-tee, now, 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 brought her home by the light. The Birds, a 1963 horror thriller, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. I talked about him quite a bit last week, so if you want to go into his stuff, you got a whole, almost 2-hour episode to listen to that.
Yeah, really.
It is based on the story of the same name by Daphne du Maurier. This is the third adaptation that he had done of her work. It was preceded by the film Rebecca and Jamaica Inn. The film stars Tippi Hedren in her film debut as the main protagonist, and her male co-star was Rod Taylor. I spoke at length about Tippi last week.
Yes.
So again, you can find out more about her on that episode. But I did want to include a fun fact. Her granddaughter is Dakota Johnson.
That sounds... I know I'm going to get shit.
Have you seen Fifty Shades of Grey?
No. But I know who the actress is.
Okay, so you, get, so you know that's who it is.
Okay.
Weird. I didn't recognize any of the credits from Rod Taylor, but I actually wanted to bring something up when I was reading about this.
Okay.
Is that he has publicly said that he witnessed the abuse that Tippi endured on set, and he has been a vocal supporter of her throughout her coming forward in the Me Too movement. But I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, that is like that is really awesome of him to basically back her up and say like, no, it's not bullshit.
Like, yeah, and different from like the normal
other people. Yes.
Yeah. And then Veronica Cartwright plays the little sister in the film.
Okay.
And she was in a movie we have previously reviewed on this podcast.
Oh, God. You're going to ask me a question.
I'm going to give you a hint.
Okay.
We had Allie on the podcast for an interview. She wrote a blog post about this character.
Oh, is it Bride of Chucky?
No.
Okay.
You're thinking of Allison. Allie wrote for Bloody Disgusting.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, shit. Is she an alien?
Yep. Lambert.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yep, so the young sister actually grew up to play Lambert in Alien.
Oh, weird. Weird.
Yeah. Little fun fact. The film was deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant by the U.S. Library of Congress in 2016 and is preserved in the U.S. National Film Registry. Although the majority of the birds used in the film are real, over $200,000 was spent on mechanical birds for certain scenes. Apparently, they had animal handlers on site and animal cruelty experts on site to make sure the birds were not abused. If only they had done that for the actresses. And all of the gulls in the film were caught at dumps from California.
Oh, lovely. I'm sure they smelled great.
One of the things I wanted to mention, and you actually talked about this too, which I found kind of cool, is the score. There is none.
Yep.
He made that decision. Hitchcock did. He wanted to use the electroacoustic mixture tritonium to create the bird calls and bird noises. He had encountered the predecessor to the synthesizer, which is what the machine was, when he was doing Berlin radio in the 1920s.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll get around to audio when we get there.
All right. And then one of the coolest things for this film is special effects. And we can talk about how we like or didn't like it when we get to the cinematography part. But I actually copied directly from Wikipedia because a lot of this stuff is like beyond me, like technical stuff. So I figured I'd just read it because it is. This is probably one of the things that's coolest about this movie. Once the crow attack and attic scenes were assembled by the film editor, George Tomasani, they were sent to the special effects department for enhancement. The film required mirror special effects, and Hitchcock commissioned the help of various studios. The special effects of the attacking birds were completed at Walt Disney Studios by animator technicians Ube Erwix, who used sodium vapor process, or the yellow screen, which he had helped develop. Fun fact, Ube Erwix created Mickey Mouse.
Oh, so Mickey Mouse helped make this movie.
The SV, or yellow process films, the subject against a screen lit with a narrow spectrum sodium vapor lights. Unlike most compositing processes, SVP shoots two separate elements of the footage simultaneously using a beam splitter. One reel is regular film stock, and the other a film stock with emulsion sensitive only to sodium vapor wavelength. This results in very precise matte shots compared to the blue screen of special effects, necessary due to the fringing of the image from the bird's rapid wing flapping. At Disney, Erwix worked on the following scenes: the children's party, Melanie driving to Bodega Bay, the first two cuts of the crow attack sequence. One of the biggest challenges facing Erwix was the scene where a number of sparrows fly in through the chimney of the family home. Utilizing an optical printer, His superposition of a group of small birds flying inside of an enclosed glass booth made it possible to multiply the birds in the living room. Most of the special effects work done at Disney was completed in the process lab on Printer 10, which was made from Ubrick's original design. At MGM, Bob Hogue was put in charge of optical effects for the sequence where Melanie hides inside a telephone booth and is attacked by the birds. Hitchcock had requested that Hogue remove any shot where Melanie looked placid and urged that she be in constant movement instead. Hogue, along with a team of 30 people, worked together on the blue backing and the sodium matte shots. Linwood Dunn, a founder of Film Effects of Hollywood, was commissioned to work on the attic scene. He was asked to produce a rough cut of the sequence where Hitchcock left for Berlin in December of 1962. Bill Abbott at Fox was in charge of the optical effects for the crow attack sequence. Universal associate editor Ross Hoffman and matte artist Albert Whitlock worked on designing the town's backdrop, which included the birds and the trees and the scenery. There are also several sequences which use paintings superimposed on top of live action footage that gives the appearance of like setting when it's not actually there. One of the sequences, you know, when the fire's burning downtown?
Yeah.
So the fire and the streets are real. Everything else is a painting.
We'll get into it.
This film is incredible when it comes to special effects. Especially when you think they didn't have computers back then. And this is all done by hand. And all this like individual editing and stuff was done through practical means. I mean, we'll talk about how it aged and everything. But at the time...
Oh, at the time, I have
nothing had been seen like this before.
Yeah, I have no doubt that it looked incredible at the time.
The film was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Special Effects and lost to the film Cleopatra. I don't know how.
I've never seen Cleopatra, so okay.
Not bad, but the special effects were not this.
Okay.
Controversies with the film. Last week, I discussed at length Hitchcock's treatment of Tippi Hedren on set during and after filming. It is believed, because of how she spurned his advances, that he did the following. Others, though, who defend Hitchcock claim it was for the artistic effect.
So bullshit. Okay.
She was injured in the phone booth attack sequence and actually injured when glass came through and cut her face. That footage was kept in the final product of the film.
What a piece of shit.
And one I kind of teased last week, in the final attack sequence in the bedroom, the plan until literally the day of shooting was to use robotic birds. However, Hitchcock changed his line at the last minute and decided to use real birds. Tippi was not told about this until right before shooting, and she was truly terrified by being attacked by birds. I think they shot over 5 days. By the end of the fifth day, she had to go see a doctor because she was so distraught and bothered. And in the sequence where Rod carries her down the stairs, that is actually a body double because she was admitted into the hospital.
Man, like, what a piece of shit. Really, like, what an asshole. That's all I really have to say is what a fucking asshole.
Shot on a budget of $3 million, the film would gross over $11 million at the box office. A poorly received television sequel called The Birds 2, Land's End, was released in 1994. Director Rick Rosenthal removed his name from credit and used a Hollywood pseudonym instead. The sequel featured entirely new characters in a different setting, with Bodega Bay only mentioned once. Tippi Hedren did return in a supporting role, but not as her original character.
Yeah, I won't lie. I saw the fact that there was a sequel and thought about looking it up for a second, but...
Have you learned your lesson to trust Larry when...
That's the thing. I learned my lesson from Salem's Lot.
Salem's Lot, I think, taught you a very valuable lesson.
It was a very time-consuming lesson, but yeah, I learned my lesson.
So that's what I have, Justin, for background notes. So if you're good, I can do the summary.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just give you a 3, 2, 1, and then go if you're ready.
Perfect.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
So Melanie Daniels, who we are introduced to as kind of a prankster, is in a bird shop looking to buy some birds. That's where she comes across Mitch Brenner, who is the male co-lead. And basically, they have this little flirtatious encounter, and she decides to play a prank on him. And through the most devious means ever, she figures out where he lives, his whole family's name and everything, goes and tracks him down, to give him these lovebirds. And when she gets there, it's this love dynamic that's kind of growing is kind of being overshadowed by the weird actions of the birds. And over the course of a long weekend, the birds started getting more and more violent, leading to these attacks. And basically, by the end of the weekend, the birds in waves are killing people in the town of Bodega Bay. The film ends with them barricading the house. And then, I mean, Melanie, Mitch, Lydia, and Kathy. And Melanie goes upstairs. She gets attacked by birds. And that is when Rod decides to save her. They all get in the car and drive away. And we never find out why the birds are attacking.
Yeah, I mean, you got it. yeah, you got it. I think... okay. I feel like a lot of people are going to disagree with how I feel on this movie.
I think so too, because we haven't talked about it, obviously, but just kind of catching some of your feelings, I think we may disagree. so do you want to start positively or negatively on plot?
I'll start positive. I mean, honestly, I actually kind of like the way that they kind of like give you the idea like head on that she's kind of like a prankster when he comes into the shop.
That was
fun,
immediately wasn't
it? She's like, oh yeah, I work here, blah, 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 even though she's wrong on all this shit. Like, I really enjoyed the fact that they kind of made you, they could have just, I mean, obviously they did say, oh yeah, she's a prankster after she pulled all that, but they made you like,
yeah,
realize that the lead in this movie is not exactly on the level.
It's one of the things I think, because I know you haven't watched a lot of Hitchcock films, but I'm not sure you like, we'll probably like more on audio, but as far as plot goes, I think Hitchcock does a really good job of using characters to kind of describe themselves as opposed to like this flat out telling you stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like interactions with people and figuring stuff out. And then also like leaving like mystery behind it. And that is one of the things that he was probably best known for, especially in films like Strangers on a Train or Rear Window. Like it's, or Psycho for people, the mainstream one, right? It's like a very good job of like giving you enough information, but kind of keeping you in the dark a little bit. And another pro that I have for plot, outside, okay, I agree with what you said, is this film is centered around a female protagonist.
Yep.
And yet it isn't feminine.
No, yeah, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head last week when you said, like, just wait, you'll see how he portrays women, basically, in his movies.
Yeah.
And, oh boy, you weren't wrong. She wasn't exactly he made her seem really dumb. Not, well, I shouldn't say really dumb, but...
a little bit airheaded, and then the worst part for me is I actually kind of like her, because at the beginning of the film, she's, like, self-confident. She's like super smart. She's savvy. She figures out where he lives and his whole family's name and canize all that stuff out of it. But by the end of the movie, she's like broken. Like by the end of the movie, like we're almost back in a Night of the Living Dead situation with Barbara.
oh man, especially like literally by the end, like that is how Barbara felt. Yeah.
And it's hard because we know in real life that what happened. It's because he literally broke her. Like that's what happened. And that's hard to reconcile. Because then you have to question, is that like the actual plot meaning or is that just what Hitchcock did to her?
Yeah.
And it's hard. But the film at least starts off with a really strong female lead, which is cool.
Yeah, and I do like how when you get to it eventually they do kind of give you, well, try to give you little ideas of how everything is happening, or not how, but why everything is happening. Like they talk about the feed being wrong or the birds being sick. Like they kind of mention it a little bit in the background, but it's never like shoved in your face. Like, oh, this is why this is happening.
There is no solution presented, right?
Yeah.
Like there's like things hinted at. And on that same note, like I talked about last week with like the bomb theory, right? Is the birds are there the whole time. Like from the very opening shot in the bird store, like, they're constantly there. Even like, because this movie, we don't have a death until like an hour in.
Yeah, it's funny. I I won't lie. As soon as the birds, like the first bird, like attacked, I was like, oh man, I wonder how long, like how far we are into this movie. And it was like, oh yeah,
yeah, it was about an hour until she found the dead guy in the house. Yeah. Which was, oh my God, we'll talk about that in cinematography. But like, but the whole time, we know the movie's called The Birds, and the whole time we're seeing birds throughout, but like, yeah, it's not constant, you know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of restraint in it, which I do like.
Yeah, I agree. I like that. Well, see, I'm not really sure if this would go into plot or cinematography. I'll save it for cinematography.
Okay.
I'll save it for cinematography. I just want to talk about the school scene, but I feel like that's more
probably better cinematography. Yeah. I think.
I don't like how. Sorry, I'm just gonna kind of be all over the place with this.
You're fine.
Basically, as soon as I'm horrible with names, but the guy catches her in a lie, she basically just turns into an idiot.
Her whole thing breaks down.
Yes, I really, really don't like that. Like, I really wish that, because, like you said, like at the start of this movie, she sleuths her way into finding out where this guy lives on the weekends. And she's like so incredibly confident with like how she's going about it. And then the second she's
renting caught, boats and conning people and
yeah. And then the second she's caught, it's like, oh, well, and then she starts tripping over her story constantly. And I don't know. I really wish that her character was, well, I guess you kind of brought it up. Like, I really wish her character was kept written so strong.
Like Hitchcock liked to chase strong women, but then he wanted them to break down as soon as he got them.
Yeah. Like the monster he is.
So I actually really like this. I really don't have much cons. I will say it's long, and I will say that if you aren't into some of this older dialogue and films, in particular the diner sequence, which is very stagey,
yeah,
that it probably wouldn't land for you. But overall for me, I really liked it. So if you have cons, what do you got?
So I mean, my main point really is that it's, I mean, you kind of brought it up, it's just overly long.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of that could have just been shortened out or cut out, and you wouldn't really miss anything from the overarching story.
Yeah, but I think what you would miss, and this is just my two cents, is I think what you would miss, though, is the feeling like, is this like a love triangle movie between
the teacher and
Melanie and Rod? Like, is that what this is? You know what I mean? Like, he does do a good job at like creating a story and kind of getting us to forget that we're in a horror movie about killer birds.
See, like for me personally, like I never really, like it never really amounted to much, like that whole like love kind of love triangle. So it like that didn't really land for me, because it wasn't really, the teacher basically said like, I still like him, but
That's it.
I'll be close. Kind of dialogue, and I was like,
you gotta watch more Audrey Hepburn movies.
And I was like, okay, cool. Movies. Like, yeah, I'll get there eventually. But I don't know. A lot of that stuff, like you mentioned, the diner scene is very, very over dramatic. Mm-hmm. Like, again, it has a certain feel to it that isn't my feel that I like.
And hey, at least Melanie put the burn the witch thing down real fast when she started accusing her of it. Didn't let a miss situation happen in that diner.
But that mister and his drink just needs to finish his drink so they could leave town. Oh my God.
I loved it.
I did not. Yeah. And obviously the ending. I don't know if something about that ending was just very like, oh, it's over? Oh,
Hitchcock, okay. Man. That's Hitchcock, man.
Yeah, it's not my style.
I liked it. I did like it. I like how nothing was answered. I like how we don't know really if they get away. I like the juxtaposition of that car sequence. I don't know. I do like the ending. But again, Hitchcock is not everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah. I agree. Like, I can... That's the thing. Is like, I could see people who like these kinds of movies liking this movie.
Yeah.
But for me, it just was... A lot of it wasn't hitting, and it just felt.
And it's hard too, because, I mean, you sat here for 2 hours last week and listened to me highlight stuff that really isn't talked about when it comes to Hitchcock.
Yeah, Oh, and then I have to go watch one of his movies, and I'm like, I know. Man, this whole time, this guy's just a big fucking asshole.
For plot, I gave it an 8.5.
I give it a 6.
I think a 6 is fair, because I know that's not really, like, this really is not your kind of movie, but I think that's really fair.
It is, because, like, the thing is like, I didn't, honestly, you had warned me ahead of time that it is long and you might find it boring. Yes. So I kind of went in with low expectations, and, like, yeah, while I didn't love it, I didn't hate it. I it was okay. I would watch it again, but not for a while.
Cool. Cinematography. This is one where I might fight you on.
Okay.
So I included all the special effects stuff because, yes, to me, even though some sequences have not aged well.
Yes.
Like the yellow vape, like the yellowing scenes and that filmmaking, like, they did it because it was the best way they could do it at the time. It's how they made Disney movies, is that kind of stuff. It's how they made, what's it called? What's that movie that's racist? Called the South, or Song of the South, the Disney movie. Like, it's how they made movies like that. I've never actually seen it. It has Zippity-Doo-Dah, which is, like, my favorite Disney song, which sucked when I found out it was racist in origin. But for me, I think it's astounding. I think it's astounding that they use live birds. Like, there are a couple of sequences, like, when the kid, like, when she's sitting there on that seat outside of the school, and, like, we hear the birds, but we don't see them until she sees them.
Yeah.
We didn't know how scary, but that's brilliant filmmaking.
Oh, I won't disagree with you. I think the shots with real birds look great.
Are the majority.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of, like, the, you could kind of tell, well, I mean, you obviously, it being 2021, you could pretty well tell when, like, what
baby. When did,
like,
you, because I know you mentioned birds, the kid, the crow scene. When did you think you saw a fake bird?
Well, there's a difference between a fake bird and a copied bird.
Okay.
The copied bird, I mean, you kind of brought up the whole sparrow scene.
Yes, sparrow. There were no sparrows in that room.
Yeah, it looked that way.
Sure. Still impressive acting, though.
Oh,
not
the acting. The acting, yeah, is a different thing. I'm trying to remember the movie now. It's okay. So there's the sparrows, which, again, I could,
you
do
brought up the crows scene at the school, and the reason why I'm pressing you on that.
No, I meant when they are running away from the school.
But not when the crows are actually attacking?
No.
Okay, because those are real. They tied
crows, yeah, didn't they tie
to those,
like,
kids'
lines?
Necks.
Yeah.
And they sprinkled bird seed in their fucking hair.
Yeah, what a bunch of monsters.
That's why I was like, dude, that's real.
No,
like, you can't, like, get more real than what they did to those kids.
No, I meant, like, when they are just hands down, like, running away.
Sure,
when they,
okay.
Specifically,
I'll give you that.
When they, like, come out of the school, and mm-hmm. there's that film grainy, kind of weird, everything looks a little off look. Everything looks a little vape, like it has a little bit of vapor rub on it, kind of.
Yeah, there is one scene for me that kind of prevents this from having a perfect score, okay, honestly, and take a couple points off, because I'm honestly blown away, especially, like, doing the research into it and seeing how they did it. Like, it's incredible. It's incredible filmmaking. It's magic. It's Hollywood magic before computers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I really like that. But there's a scene, which is when the bird attacks the gas attendant and the gas starts going towards the drinking man, which you talked about, and Tippi Hedren has those three cut shots.
Oh, my, like, God. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
That is, for a movie that is just so brilliantly shot, I don't know what the fuck was going on there.
Yeah, I mean,
you know
thinking,
what I mean?
Thinking about that scene just makes me laugh. So,
yeah. Like, yeah, that literally took off solid points. Plural points, because of how cringy that is. And then I want to talk about the discovery of the farmer's body, but I want to say that for How Scary. So I want to save that for then, if you're okay with that.
Absolutely. I just want to say that it does look amazing.
Holy shit. And there's no, like, score.
Yeah.
And during that, it's silence.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about next. But yeah. So that's all I have for cinematography, is that overall, I'm blown away. But that one sequence, man, with that fireball, even though the fireball looks good when the drinking man blows up, like, it looks super cool. Tippi Hedren's cut shot back and forth is
laughable.
Oh, that is being kind.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I do agree. I think that, again, the Spiro scene and coming out of the school and even the birds that aren't attacking the phone booth that are just kind of off in the background, they just have that, like, off look about them. And I think that, yeah, you know what, maybe if I watched this movie back then, that would be amazing. Because it does sound like they were kind of on the breaking point of technology, basically.
Without a doubt. Yeah, 100%. Especially, like I said, there's no computers to help them. So when they superimpose those birds over, like, that fire sequence, they had to individually go through there and take out the real image.
Yeah, and I think it does work. I mean, it's not... It almost has a feel of 90s CGI, but now. Not as bad, but...
90s CGI is something really, really...
special. But the thing is like, in the 90s, when they were doing that, it was like, oh shit, this looks amazing. This is awesome. It's not to the same effect. I think 90s CGI looks way worse now than this does because they were just copying the image, basically, copying the film.
Yeah.
But it definitely still has that, like, off look to it. But overall...
It is definitely off. You're not wrong.
But overall, you're
not wrong. I gave it an 8.
I gave it a 7, actually. I didn't think it was half bad.
Like I said, I was blown away, but man, for how crisp and cutting edge it was, that scene, the triple cut shot, is just unpleasant to watch. Audio. Talk acting first. I personally think the acting across the board is awesome. I think the sexual chemistry between Tippi and Rod is, like, palpable, and it's funny, and it builds. Like, it's not immediate, you know what I mean? Like, they're definitely building towards something. I think the mother's feelings towards Melanie are really good. I mentioned I like the love triangle dynamic that's kind of hinted. I love the diner scene with all these different, like, characters. We have the Doomsdayer, we have the shanty sea captain, the prissy Christian mom. Like, we have, like, all these characters, know-it-all old lady, like, all these characters in there. I really love that. I think the acting in this movie is fantastic. I think it is definitely your standard 60s acting kind of vibe, right? Because it's not like watching a modern film where you're kind of immersed. It's definitely like you're watching a movie. But I think the acting is great. I think Tippi Hedren is amazing. I like Rod Taylor's performance. Those two in particular, I thought, were just fantastic. I have no complaints with the acting. I truly loved it. But I also like the Cary Grant, Audrey Hepburn movies of that time period too.
You like the theatrical awe of it. Yes.
So I know that I'm coming from kind of a different place.
Yeah. I think the main, basically your main characters, do a fantastic job. I think they are hands down amazing in this. But, yeah, again, that diner scene with, like, basically everybody else in town is a caricature.
Yep.
Caricature.
It is incredibly stagey.
Yes. And it really, to me, pulls me out of the moment. And I'm like,
I can definitely see that from your perspective.
Yeah. And I mean, but other than that, like, I completely agree with the main cast. I think they nail it, really.
Yeah.
Even the teacher, even though she's not, like, she is a main player.
You care when she dies.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's rough, like, she's a main player. But, yeah. I felt bad for the little girl. Ugh. Yeah. No, I agree, though. For the acting, I think the main cast knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. There's no score.
That's right. Sorry, Ed.
You're okay. There's kind of this tech techno-ish kind of music that I mentioned when I was describing it, that precursor to the synthesizer that was used. Yes. The bird calls and nature is very amplified throughout. The bird calls are, we can talk about that, but
oh, we are going to be talking about that.
I was saying that for the end, for the last part of this okay. For this. But like Justin played the rickety crackety or rickety rockety or whatever the hell.
Yeah.
Like that song was on for like 3.5 minutes and it is unnerving because it's like the build up to that crow sequence like I was talking about.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of times where he uses silence or like just the noise of flapping of bird wings and it really creates this overwhelming sense of dread. But we need to talk about the bird calls.
Oh, those fucking bird calls.
So,
man.
A quick note before you go.
Okay.
I think what people probably know by now, I'm a zoology major. I took an ornithology class. I had to memorize over 200 unique bird calls.
Oh my God, you are that old lady's from the old lady from the diner's like best friend.
I know.
God, I hated that character too.
I do not understand why he chose to use the awfully grating, unrealistic bird calls, the same bird calls, whether it be crow or gull or sparrow or whatever the hell. I don't understand when there are some truly unique and almost like dinosaur-y bird calls that exist in the world.
I honestly, listening to it, almost brought me back to them. I wouldn't say it's as bad, but it definitely got close sometimes when it was basically Bird Attack City.
Yeah.
That noise was almost as bad as them when the ants were on screen for like 2 minutes straight.
And that's what I'm saying. I don't understand why. Like,
yeah, either do I.
There are so many bird calls to choose from. And I don't get why you choose this fake sounding grating noise.
Yeah, I honestly have no idea. It really,
again, took off a lot of points for whereas I really liked it. It took off some solid points for me, yeah. Again, because it's like a very weird choice that I don't understand.
And the worst part is like backed against the fantastic acting. And like you said, when he creates those, he fills a room with silence, yes, sometimes, and it really works. Mm-hmm. That those fucking bird calls, like, really, like, they're so bad.
They're so bad.
It's one of those things that I don't even know how, back when this movie came out, they thought it sounded good.
The only thing I can even guess is that he wanted it to be grating, and that is why they went for that noise. That's why I included that segment about the sound and the bird calls and stuff.
It was
my only guess. All right, so with that, I gave it an 8.
Oh,
sorry. Go ahead.
I actually have one more thing. Yeah. There is one theme or one song in this movie, and it's the opening theme.
Yeah.
And even that was almost grating to me.
It was probably used by the same machine that I've mentioned.
Yes, and it's unfortunate that they set you up basically at the start. Like, that's the first thing you hear in this movie, mm-hmm, when all the credits are coming. And when that started playing, I was like, oh, great. I'm just going to turn this movie down, and it's not going to be very enjoyable. And it sucks to have to start that off because of this audio choice.
It's very different from the rest of his work because I think I mentioned last week, he has a partner who he worked with for almost all of his movies.
Yeah.
And you know the Psycho theme. You know the Vertigo theme, yeah, now. Like, the scores are iconic. He went an entirely different route here, and I personally think it wasn't the right choice. Oh, I have no problem not having... Sorry. I have no problem with him using silence and him using, like, the sounds of nature to kind of build a theme, like you said, using silence to fill the room. My problem is the bird call, and then that you're right. The opening sequence sound is not pleasant.
Well, even like to me, an audio nightmare, and this might only be because of doing the podcast. The first scene of this movie when they are talking in the bird shop was like an auditory nightmare.
Yeah, sure.
But other than that, sorry, go ahead with your
story. I gave it an 8. Sorry.
I gave it a 6. Just those bird calls really. It was just like three things that really dragged it down for me. It was the opening scene, theme, and the bird calls.
So how scary? This was your first viewing ever.
It sure was.
I saw it as a kid with my grandfather. I have watched a couple times growing up, and then obviously recently.
Yeah.
There are some scenes in this movie that truly disturb me. When Lydia, the mom, goes into the farmhouse and finds the dead farmer. That never stops messing with me.
Yeah.
Because the eyes.
Oh, the eyes are fucked up. Oh, I mean, I guess they're not there, yeah. but it's fucked up.
I know you said that you could really tell it was fake, but I thought the acting in the scene where the sparrows came down and just the immediacy of how it went from calm eating dinner to just awfulness, that always kind of struck a chord with me. And then finally, I'm not sure. It bothered me when I saw it as a kid, and it was always like kind of it's one of the more climactic moments of the movie. And then knowing what we know now, when Melanie goes into the attic because she hears a noise, and then knowing that those are real birds being thrown at her day after day, some of those cuts are real, some of that blood is her own, and watching her fall to the floor, knowing that it messed her up, so that is disturbing as shit. I've talked about how the setup to the crow scene outside the school with the rickety rackety song going on, and her we hear the noises but we don't really see it. We see kind of it starting, and then she turns around and the murder of crows is there. There are some scenes in this movie that I think are incredibly horrifying and scary. It's hard, especially because you haven't seen a lot of Hitchcock films. This buildup is what he's known for. This mounting suspense, the bomb thing, right? With knowing we're building to something. But that doesn't mean the first hour of this movie could be an Audrey Hepburn romantic comedy. It just honestly could be. But it's just the knowing that something is coming. And I think another thing for me, and it's the reason why my score is probably higher than yours, I'm almost certain it's going to be.
Oh, definitely.
is when you think of a movie called The Birds, and you know it's about killer birds, you're ready to laugh. Similar to them, giant ants. It's okay. How scary can this be? I do think it is a testament to Hitchcock's. It's the reason why they call him the master of terror. There are times where you are legitimately afraid of the birds. And with the technology they had then and the crazy premise that it is, I think that is pretty incredible. So, and maybe I'm just dying for something spooky in kaiju, but I'm not saying this is The Conjuring. I am not saying this is Halloween 2018. I'm not saying any of that. What I'm saying is, for the premise that it is, in the filmmaking style which he had and what he was able to do, and then you tack on knowing what Tippi Hedren was going through and some of the shit she endured in real life while filming some of these terrifying scenes, I do think it really bumps up that horror score. So that's all I really have to say about it.
I do second some of the things. Mainly the farmer was... That was some scary shit, especially from a movie this old. And
just the silent, like, zooming on his face.
Oh yeah, I like, no when sound. She saw the body. When she saw the body, I was like, okay, that is what they're gonna show. Yeah, and then nope, zoom into the eyes. Okay, cool. And other than that, I do agree with the great tension building outside of the school.
Yeah.
But to me, a lot of those scenes were really kind of broken down because of the calls and the noises that these birds make when they do finally do their thing.
It bugged you that bad, huh?
It really bugged me. Like I said, it was almost them level, and them was fucking god awful with those ant noises. Yeah. I agree. I think the final, I guess you could say final bird attack, I was going to say final scene, but it's not the final scene, in the attic was really well done. Unfortunately, it's because it was
real.
Actual psychological terror. But I think that comes across. Obviously, you're going to get a little goofiness with, like you said, like the dramatist. No, that's not the right word. The very, like, it's very theatrical.
Stagey obviously, is the word I use.
Yeah, it's, thank you. I was going for, like, some dramatic goal or some shit that.
Yeah, I always use the word basically. Stagey to describe these kind of films. It's like they're on an actual stage performing for you.
Yeah, and sometimes you do feel that, like, very over dramatic theatrical 100%. Presence. And again, that did bring it down.
The Dr. Loomis of it all. Said,
yeah, yes. And I mean, that being said, it wasn't the worst thing we've watched by far.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think it had that big of an effect on me. Now, my wife, Michelle, is terrified of birds.
Really?
So she could not watch half this movie with me.
Pretty rough.
So,
especially if you're actually afraid of birds. And then one other thing before we give scores, I think we do have the comment, the death of the school teacher is brutal. The way we come across the body
absolutely.
And splayed out, and the fact that the little sister had to watch it, and then the little sister retells the tale about what happened.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to how, without even showing us anything, we can be horrified and scared.
Yeah.
Which, again, like I talked about last week, Hitchcock is one of the best filmmakers of all time. But it doesn't excuse...
he should still rot in hell.
It doesn't excuse the monstrous nature of how he acted.
Yeah.
Okay, how scary? I gave it an 8. Like, I really... there.
Oh, jeez.
I So the hard part is like I couldn't give it lower than King Kong because the eyes will give me a nightmare for sure. They always do. And then I won't lie. This finding out that last sequence was shot and that she literally had to go to a hospital and knowing I was watching someone in those cuts being lied to and harassed and literally broken down until she was like no longer mentally there, that really fucked with me. That was something like knowing I watched that. Because a lot of people talk about like a Campbell Holocaust. Like, is it real or is it not real? How realistic is it? Like, whatever. It's fake in the end, right? Like, this was a woman literally being put through hell. And that, knowing I watched that, makes you kind of feel complicit. And knowing that I like the movie made me feel even more complicit. So that's why it's as high as it is.
I gave it a 4. Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely scarier than some of the things we've seen. I don't know. It didn't really have a lot of staying power for me in the how scary section. Sorry, I keep burping. I'm very gassy today. But,
I saw it as a kid and it spooked me out. And then
I did have to restrain myself from giving it a higher score because we have been in a serious drought of scariness.
Yeah, and the thing is, I'm looking at the scores, and like they've mostly been like Godzilla was like lower, and King Kong was high.
Oh man, those claymation scenes, that is a thing that aged amazingly. Yeah.
But no, like I said, the reason why it's so high for me is that last sequence.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, that's fair.
Like, he put her in a hospital, man. Like,
yeah, it's fucked up. Like, he's a fucking asshole.
Like, he literally, it's similar to, like, Shelley Duvall in The Shining. He literally mentally brokered to get the scenes he wanted. And it's rough watching a movie. It's rough watching and knowing that. So, review the scores. For plot, I gave it an 8.5, just gave it a 6. For cinematography, I gave it an 8, Justin gave it a 7. For audio, I gave it an 8, Justin gave it a 6. And for how scary, I gave it an 8, Justin gave it a 4. That gives it a Here's Johnny final score of a 69. That puts it right about the middle for the podcast. It actually falls between two movies. How easy. Right above it is Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which is a 70%.
Which I want to say would be much, much lower because we reviewed that one very weirdly.
And then right below...
Because Larry wanted me to like it.
And then right below it is Brightburn. Okay. Which has a 69 also.
You know what's funny? I think it's crazy that it lands between those two movies because I think if we were to go back, I would probably have rated Brightburn higher.
I love Brightburn.
And Scary Stories a lot lower.
I love Brightburn. The final half hour of that movie is just woof.
That's the thing is like now, watching it now, I think I liked it better than when I watched it the first time.
Sure.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
So that's the last time we're going to talk about Hitchcock for a while. He might pop back up. We will have to do Psycho at some point. I would like to do Rear Window. And I think Vertigo would be another fun one to do. But okay. I don't know when that's going to happen. It will certainly be anytime soon. So we're going to put him away and not talk about him for a while. Justin, go ahead and play a commercial from a member podcast on Kaleidoscope Media Network. And we will head on into the closing.
Do you ever watch a horror movie and think, oh, wow, that headshot didn't have nearly enough blood? Don't the writers know that 20% of your blood is in your head?
Are you the type of person that tells your friends, well, why yes, in space no one can hear you scream because the molecules are too far apart to transmit sound waves?
Does it seriously annoy you when a horror movie doesn't explain its rules to you or claims to have horror rules and then just ignores them?
Do you ever express these concerns to your friends who tell you that you should stop worrying so much because it's just a horror movie, Sam?
Then stop lecturing your friends about physics and come listen to our podcast. That's Not How Science Works, which I co-host with my awesome friend, Nicole.
In our podcast, Caitlin and I discuss science in different pieces of media, such as movies or TV shows, in various genres, and dissect whether that science is good, bad, or just plain ridiculous. Often, we also have special guests who help us rant about bad science in their areas of expertise.
We release new episodes every other Monday, and you can find us wherever you usually download your podcasts. We like to think of this as a podcast for the science curious. Whether you're Sam with a dedicated YouTube channel complaining about bad science in horror movies, or just like to learn things while listening to friends banter about what they watched that week, we'd love for you to listen in.
You can find out more by going to our website, thatsnotscience.com, or by looking us up on Twitter at TNHSWpod. We hope you give us a listen. Now back to your regularly scheduled horror enthusiasts, Larry and Justin, and that's definitely a word that's a real word and not a word that I just made up, and whatever terrifying thing they're discussing that would probably give me daymares for a week.
So coming up, next week we are reviewing Silent Hill Origins. We are going to be joined by Jake. He is a top 10 speedrunner of this game in the world.
Yes. I'm excited. I won't lie. He was actually one of the ones who jumped into the chat with me, and we had some fun talk about Silent Hill tropes and looking forward to it.
We competed against Jake in the Nude Hog in 2018. I did defeat him in the Big Hog Challenge of Total Media Consumed. Did you beat him in the game?
No, he got me by one game. Because I remember that last night, I had a fucking pounding headache because I had played 300 goddamn games that year. Yeah. I had like a constant headache that entire year.
Well, that was the thing for me. It's like I realized I wasn't able to keep up on the game, beating games like with you two. But what I could do is I could watch TV shows. Yeah. So literally, I had my iPad with me at all times, and I just went through shows. Like, I always had it on me. Like, when I fell asleep, it was running. When I woke up, I turned it on. It was...
Yeah.
It was the most... It was so much. But I won. I've never gotten my reward. I'm still pissed off about it. I never got the Dude Hulk binder that I was promised. But I did win. And then we will be going into a spurt of movies.
Yes.
Which will be started by our first Spielberg film, Jaws.
Oh, I closed the schedule, so I don't even remember what's coming up.
It's all good. I'm nervous about Jaws, though.
Why is that?
So Jaws is the reason why I will not go in the ocean. Like, I will go up to, like, my knees. I won't go any further. But it's been a while since I've watched the whole movie.
Yeah.
It's very boring.
Oh, I'm going to crank that so everybody can hear it. But Larry just said it's very boring.
I like the first 10 minutes. I like the scene where what's-his-face scratches the chalkboard. Mm-hmm. And then I like the last half hour.
Okay, so
but it's been a while since I've seen it, so maybe I'll feel different.
I don't think you will. I think it's going to be a very interesting review, but hey, that's okay. Kaiju is turning out to be a very interesting season for a different reason.
Kaiju is an interesting season for sure. Make sure you check us out on Twitch. Make sure you follow the show on all our social medias. Again, we need to recut our final outro thing, but
we'll get to it.
Before I forget, we do have a Promising Young Woman spoiler-filled review. It is a Patreon exclusive. It will remain that way probably forever. To get access to it, only costs $1, nothing more than that. Everything we do on Patreon, all the specials, if you go to the dollar tier, you get every special available.
Yeah, and like the episodes like a day early, or yes. Basically whenever I get them edited. Sometimes I get them edited early, and I just toss them on.
I guess what I meant is, like, if you want to listen to these special episodes we're dropping, like the Final Fantasy IX, the Promising Young Woman, we're probably going to do Mortal Kombat that way. And then all the Final Fantasy stuff for $1. That's all it takes to.
And I'm just going to say this now. There is a episode coming up that will have a video component to it, kind of, that is going to be Patreon only.
And because of the House and House trying to sue us. But maybe we should just tell them. If they stuck around this long, they deserve to know.
Yeah.
Justin and I are going to record ourselves together watching Arachnophobia.
Now I know I have arachnophobia, and I know Larry has it much worse than I do. So
it will be a Patreon exclusive, so you'll have to be on Patreon to check it out. But yeah, we gotta figure out how to do that. Like, I'm not sure if we're able, like, what it might actually end up being is like a commentary with, like, me and you sitting there and just, like, telling you when to sync it up with the movie so you can, like, have like us on one screen and the movie on the other, because I really don't want to have Disney come down and ruin our fun.
Yeah, we tried to look into that, and it was very, in their website, it even said, like,
very, very clear what Disney's rules are. The House of Mouse does not play fucking games. But
I feel like one more thing. Sorry.
Yeah.
We have been kind of kicking around the idea of, like, post shows and kind of monthly chit chats and kind of other things that we can do for Patreon. So if you are a Patreon, first of all, thank all of you. Thank you all so very much. And if you have anything you'd like to see, just let us know. We are open to anything and everything. Except for
porn. Yeah, I mean, I'm down to do whatever. Except the biggest thing I need is, like, we need is just guidance. Just let us know what want and what you would like to do with us, because we're trying to get more interaction, because our downloads are amazing, but we don't have a lot of, like, emails or stuff. So whatever we can do to get people more involved, I'm down for.
Oh, and I will tell Larry about this after we are done recording, but not myself, but somebody I am close to, is working on t-shirt designs and potentially some logos for Twitch and all that fun stuff. I will tell you about it after.
All right. So then, guys, until next time, stay scary. The Here's Johnny podcast is brought to you by Larry and Justin. You can find the show on Twitter at Here's Johnny Cast, and you can find Larry at Beaver LA.
You can find Justin at Pickle Thing, and you can email the show at heresjohnnypodcast@gmail.com. You can look us up on Facebook at Here's Johnny Podcast.
As always, in the show notes, you can find links to the Discord and to the website. We are also on Instagram at @heresjohnny_podcast.
Also in the show notes, we'll have a link to the Twitch and YouTube channels. And if you would like to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/heresjohnnypodcast. Every cent goes into the show. And yeah, we just really use it to make the show better. Again, I just want to say thank you very much to our patrons. You guys help make this possible.
But yeah, Patreon is the way we support the show. We aren't looking to get rich. And like Justin said, every dollar, every cent, it all goes back in. There's some pretty cool tiers. So head on and look at that.
But until next week, see you guys later.